Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and this podcast is being recorded somewhere in northwestern America. Joining me today is Devinder Hardawar.
Shout out to Yayan Ruhian. Whenever he shows up, you know the main character is going to have a bad time.
And Jeff Cannata.
Today we're reviewing a movie that asks the question, why punch a man with your fists when you can punch a man with your entire body?
Yes.
Those are, of course, all vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be reviewing The Furious. It's been out in theaters over the course of the last few weeks in America and will be out on video on demand, I believe, mid-July, for those who are curious.
Yeah.
But we have gotten several requests to review this one, and I am looking forward to discussing it with the folks here on the podcast. You can find more episodes of this show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Of course, we got some what we've been watching for you before we get to our weekly plugs and our main review. I, of course, need to mention, guys, an ongoing segment on the podcast, which is everyone's summer movie wager is in complete shambles. Because this last weekend, Universal and Illumination's Minions and Monsters opened to $61.4 million. The lowest beginning ever for any movie in the Despicable Me and Minions franchise.
It's finally happening. We just it's just not advantageous to us, but finally it's happening.
But also, it's funny because this is apparently a good one.
Well, like we'll discuss that
aspires
momentarily.
Aspires to be good. Yeah.
We'll discuss that momentarily, but I did just want to mention, like, this is probably going to struggle to get to $150 million, which is, like, way lower. That amount is way lower than what we all thought it would make when we made our summer movie wagers. So
up is down, left is right. Even the Minions can't make money. What is happening?
Yeah, I mean, me and Peter Serretta both put Minions and Monsters at number three. BJ, Devendra, and Jermaine put Minions and Monsters at number four. Jeff, in probably the best move he ever has ever made in a summer movie wager, put it at number five. But
that's way too high still.
My guess is that it will not come even close to number five. That's my guess.
Remember how we all predicted that the new Minions movie wasn't going to do as well as that movie based on the YouTube thing?
Mm-hmm.
Remember how we all predicted that?
I do remember that, Jeff. I mean, I wish that that is what I had remembered. But anyway, this whole summer and the box office is just a testament to our... here's the thing, though, Jeff, too, is every year you say, this year I'm going to go with my conscience and not underestimate the taste of the American people. And you never do.
Never do.
This year, we actually should have done that. And we might have been better off as a people. So...
Yeah, my conscience never shows up at the selection episode. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It never shows up.
Very strange. Very strange. Well, anyway, just wanted to mention that. Regardless, let's move on to what we've been watching this week. And let's start with Minions and Monsters. Now, I want to explain the story of how
this happened. Why did you go see this?
Okay, here's why. Here's why.
I know why I went to see it.
Let me explain.
Choices.
I must explain. Okay, so first of all, the press embargo for Minions and Monsters lifted a little bit earlier in the week, and this is one of the best-reviewed Minions/Despicable Me movies ever. It has a 91% Rotten Tomatoes. And not only that, but we'd heard from many people, including former Filmcast guests BJ Colangelo, Jermaine Lucier, oh, there's something special about this year's Minions. It's a testament to... a tribute to early Hollywood and the filmmaking process, as evidenced by its title, Minions and Monsters, right? Which, of course, is an homage to Gods and Monsters. Yeah. And I actually advocated potentially for this to be a main review for us on the podcast. That was obviously not done. We are reviewing The Furious this week. But still,
and we are better for it.
It was serious enough that I was like, oh, maybe we should, maybe this should be a main review for us. I didn't like push that strong. Yeah. I wasn't like firmly committed to it. But I heard from many, many people that, oh, the movie's great. This is like the best Minions ever. And that's why it's especially tragic, as Devendra indicated, that the movie is performing so terribly. It's like the one time they try to do something interesting.
This is the Bumblebee of Transformer movies, of Minion movies.
It's bombing. And so then, You know, when the reviews started cropping up, I sent them to the group text. And Jeff Cannata, who went to go see this movie with his family, texted us back and said, I've seen it and the movie's terrible. So, but throughout the week, the drumbeat continued. I kept hearing, oh, Minions and Monsters is a great movie. So I'm like, yeah. I need to go see this movie to prove Jeff Cannata wrong. Like, I saw this movie out of spite, basically.
Wow. I have no idea the power I wield.
I think it's more like movie hits 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Suspect has just given up all of his morals and all of his beliefs and will rush to that movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Chase the trend.
That's right. That's right.
I have a theory as to the Rotten Tomatoes score, but go ahead, David.
Yeah. So Jeff said the movie's bad. It's just as bad as other Minions movies. And I kept reading from respectable film critics online that the movie Minions and Monsters is good. And so I thought, I have to go see this just to prove Jeff Cannata wrong. I need to go see this movie so that I can come onto the podcast this week and say,
put him in his place.
A plague on both your houses is what I want to say to Jeff Cannata. I guess he only has one house, but a plague on your house, Jeff. a pox on you. And so I went to go see Minions and Monsters in the theater that is closest to me, which is a very bad theater because they have the projector in the same room as the audience and it's extremely loud.
When was this theater made?
There is no, you know how usually in the projector is like there's like a dividing wall between you and the projector?
A little room?
This one doesn't have that. And so the further
this is just
back.
Just like an Epson projector on like a bookcase.
The screen is a sheet.
Yeah.
And the further back. Clothespins.
It's actually somebody's backyard.
The further back you sit, the more distracting the projector noise is, basically. So you need to sit near the front of the theater. Anyway. Mm. It gives me absolutely no pleasure to report to you that Jeff Cannata is absolutely right.
The movie's hot garbage, Dave.
Wow.
Minions and Monsters is not good. And people
bravely
who think,
going against the crowd over here. Yeah.
People who said that it is better than other Minions movies, I think are being very silly. Now, here is what Minions and Monsters does do, right?
Stockholm Syndrome, frankly, David. I think it's Stockholm. I think they've been beaten into submission by so many Despicable Me and Minions movies that they're like, oh, this one has references for me. I guess. Oh, look, it's Citizen Kane. I know that movie. This one's the good one. And they're just so beaten down by how bad these movies are that they can't see the forest for the trees anymore. They've just lost perspective.
I cannot dispute. I can't speak for other critics at major publications, but I cannot dispute what Jeff Cannata just said. I mean, Jeff is right that there are some very clever visual references to classics of cinema, right?
Clever? Clever is a strong word.
I thought the way they did the Citizen Kane reference was very, very fun. Like the way they did
He says poop instead of Rosebud. That's clever? Sorry, I'm spoiling the movie. I don't mean to spoil it.
many other movies are referenced that people, you know, the Lumiere brothers are referenced. Tons of movies for people who are familiar with the history of cinema. You will be delighted at the visual gags that are in Minions and Monsters. Having said that, and by the way, like,
for in the first 20 minutes of Minions and Monsters, and then they completely abandon that idea a whole cloth.
This movie is very different than other Minions movies, which are more like spy thrillers, so to speak. This one is really about these Minions trying to make a movie, right? They're like, hey, we're trying to make a movie and capture this magic of storytelling through the medium of film. And so maybe that's why audiences didn't resonate with this one as much as other films. But I will say that after the first 20 minutes of cool visual references, the movie is just not very good. I mean, the characters are paper thin. Stuff just happens for no discernible reason.
That's right.
And it basically just revealed itself to be not a particularly interesting story in my estimation. Now, visually, it looks great. I think like Illumination does great work on the visuals front, and you really just can feel the design of the characters is great, the texture of the world is great, but I think if you go to Minions and Monsters looking for something that is beyond what a typical Minions or Despicable Me movie is, you will be pretty disappointed. Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on Minions and Monsters?
I mean, I'm not going to be as even-handed as you are. I went with my children.
Yes. And what did they think?
They had a great... I had this... We've talked before on the show about how press screenings work.
Yes.
Typically, what happens is... as you leave the theater at a press screening, and oftentimes press screenings are alongside some other promotional screening, a radio station giveaway or some sort of community outreach where they give, you know, tickets to charitable groups or whatever. So usually they load the theater up and it's packed, but there is a subset of that who are critics. And so there are usually PR people waiting outside the doors of the theater at the movie's conclusion to intercept you and ask your opinion, just brief sort of gauge of how the critics are feeling walking out of the movie.
Right.
So it's usually give a couple of sentences of your, you know, feelings, not a full review or anything. But so that was the case with me and Monsters. And I had the unfortunate experience of walking out and having a PR person go, "So what'd you think?" And my two wide-eyed children looking up at me and going, what did daddy think?
Yes, father, and you, tell us.
And you don't want to be like, it stinks, right?
It stinks. I mean, we walked away from the PR person and my son, who's 9, went, "Dad, you didn't like it?"
He was so betrayed. He felt so betrayed in that moment.
It was like we went as a whole family and we did this thing where we had this big family outing and you were not having a good time.
That's gonna be a core memory for him, Jeff. Like he's gonna grow like 30 years from now, he's gonna remember the time he went to, like, "I went to Minions and Monsters laughing, having a blast. We leave the theater. My dad said it sucked." And that's
the first
when
scene
I knew
from the Incredibles.
That's when I lost the ability to love.
That's when supervillains are
trust my father.
I lost the ability to trust at that moment.
Because you know, then I'm walking out, going, "Oh no, I'm so glad you guys had a good time. No, it was wonderful being with the family. It was great." But hey, little tease for later on in the show. That's nothing compared to the core memory we had a little bit later in the week. So we'll get to that shortly. But
what, Jeff? What did you say to the PR person? Like, what are the exact words you used?
My exact words were, "It's a Minions movie."
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, and from that, your son was able to derive that you didn't like the movie.
I mean, he could tell. I think I said something else after that, and I can't remember what exactly it was, my exact words, but I went, "It's a Minions movie." And she went, "Oh," and I said, "Not really my speed," or something like that. Mm-hmm, it wasn't my, you know, I was trying, I was aware my children were listening to me, and I was trying to be cagey about it, but it didn't work. Anyway. Yeah. The only upshot of seeing this movie, I mean, my kids had a good time. It was fine. My wife did not care for it either. But the only upshot was that I got to tell my kids about Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
Because there are two big Buster Keaton gags.
Yeah.
They're blink and you miss them. But, I got to be like, you know, that thing that they showed in the movie with the animated guy? A real human did that,
right?
And it wasn't a special effect. It was just a human being doing that. And my son was like, "What?" So that was the upshot. That was worth the whole thing, I guess, the whole outing.
Yeah, but there you go.
The movie is so tremendously bad, in my opinion. Like, none of it makes any damn sense. The whole framing of it being set in the 20s and 30s and 40s is disturbing on a whole number of levels. Like, there's this preamble at the beginning of like all the different cultures that the minions have visited to find the worst human in
that
culture.
They really wrote themselves into a hole for this era, didn't they?
I do not understand.
Yeah.
I do not understand why they insist on making this the whole thing about the minions. You could have easily just said, "Hey, the minions just started doing this with Gru." Like, Gru is the first evil guy. Like, before
there were like minions with dinosaurs or something at some point, right? They've established like they go for the biggest bad guy, but it's like this is a bad century to be playing that game because they were in a cave during World War II. Okay, they were in a cave. in a cave. But where were they during the Cambodian genocide?
I know.
Where were they during everything else that happened? Where were the minions?
This movie explicitly places them in human history during atrocities. Like, explicitly. And at one point, they make a movie about World War II. They make a movie about World War II in the context of this movie. And it's like, and then, but then the craziest part is that, and I don't want to spoil the whole movie, but the craziest part is they
just impossible.
Completely abandoned this whole movie thing. Abandon it. Just stop doing it 100%.
It can't even stay true to its own vision, you're saying.
I don't think that is quite accurate what Jeff is saying. I mean, one of the minions wants to make a movie, and that occupies a significant portion of the runtime. But when you say abandon the whole movie thing, you mean like referencing other movies? Like, what do you mean when
referencing other, but they stop even like the something else happens. They introduce a new character who makes no sense at all. There's a character named Dort who makes no sense at all. Like, I don't even understand what we're supposed to take away from that.
I literally was like,
character.
Did I like fall asleep and miss the part where that character was like introduced? Like, what was going on with that character?
Explained in any way? He's just a supernatural character. That is just, it's just strangest, weirdest thing.
The Dort character really encapsulates all the problems with this film.
It breaks the cohesion of the Minions universe.
I mean, there
is
no cohesion, but it reinforces everything that's wrong with this franchise.
Right. That's right. Which it is just like, we're just throwing shit in there. We're just gonna throw shit in there. Doesn't matter if it makes any sense, you know. Just throw shit. Now, I understand it's about Minions, these little yellow pill shaped things. Like, it's not like vying for realism or anything like that. But even in, you know, Pixar movies where things are fantastical, there's like a logic to the universe of like why things are there and why they exist.
Well, there used to be. But yeah. We all saw Toy Story 5.
You don't just throw something in. Like, I don't even understand the function of that. Like, it's just like, hey, we need a B plot. Here's something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, let's take this off the shelf and plug it in. And it makes no sense.
He is a parody and homage to the character Gort from the 1951 film The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah, but clearly.
That's about as far as that goes in terms of relevance.
Then it's like, okay, we get that in the first 4 seconds.
Yep, and then now he's still in the movie for some reason.
Exactly. So, this movie is, I think critics are like, hey, I like old movies, and isn't it fun? And like, I will be honest with you, for the first 15 minutes of this movie, I thought, maybe this is the good Minions movie.
Same. I was like, because
it starts with this cool framing device.
Jeff Cannata was wrong. You know, that was my
it starts with this reaction. There's this cool framing device. Allison Janney is like narrating the movie, and it's kind of got this fun pace to it. And you're like, oh, and then there's this like this kind of rad chase with a train. And then it does the thing that I really hate. I this is one of my pet peeves. We've never talked about this particular pet peeve. I wonder if you guys share it. I have a massive pet peeve of in a movie, when a movie is being made, the movie that you're watching about a movie being made shows movies being made as like we just did the entire thing and tried to capture it on video. Like it's a documentary. The way that movies are made is that you just start the action sequence from the word go, and then they just try to capture all of it in one take. Right. And if they do it, like so many movies frame it that way. Like we just did the entire thing you're seeing and tried to capture it with a camera.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
that's not how movies are made.
Agreed that that's not how movies are made, but I understand why they did this for Minions, Minions and Monsters, a kid's film. I will say, Jeff, I have a similar pet peeve, which is when a critical part of the plot of a movie is they're showing footage that was captured at a different point in the story, and then the footage is just footage from the movie that you're watching, which is like, wait, that doesn't make any. Yeah. How is the camera there, and who's editing this? You know, like
exactly
what I hate.
Yeah, but anyway, or like we got a close up. How did you get that? How did you get a close up?
How'd you get the close up?
No one knows.
Do a different setup. Yeah. did you do locked off shot, different
did
setup?
You change lenses?
Camera? Yeah, did you change lenses? Yeah. Anyway, okay. So the movie is bad. It's nonsensical. It doesn't rise above the typical Minions template. And do not believe all the critics saying that this movie is good, basically.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Yes.
And Jeff was right.
Jeff was right. Dave Chen was not wrong, but kind of wrong. And
maybe it's being judged in context of other Minions movies.
I think that's the problem. I think that's exactly the problem.
Yeah.
It's like the bar is so low
that
you get 92%, you know?
Yeah,
I'm absolutely. Just waiting for, you know, these things to go public domain because the concept of the Minions, you can put them anywhere. Put them in Jonestown. The Vietnam War Minions alongside U.S. generals. Like they set this up. This is the world you built.
So you did it to yourself.
It's a logical conclusion. Yes. This has been a century of horrors. Let's put the Minions in there.
There's so many. You had so many outs and you chose to take none of them. This is the bed you made.
That's Minions and Monsters. It's something Jeff Cannata and I have been watching this week. And we did not like it very much. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. You know, we talk about mental health more openly these days, but asking for help can still feel hard. And BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe that getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. Now, why would that be? If we all believe it's important to get help, why do we think nobody wants us to get help? We have to be able to close that gap, right? We have to destigmatize therapy. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy to talk about this every week like we do here. Because I have gone to therapy. I believe in it. I think that it can actually help. It can actually be a benefit to our life. And it's not something I'm ashamed to admit. Especially these days when life is so hard and the information landscape is so brutal and so demoralizing. Get the help you need. If you need help, get the help you need and help your friends get the help they need. Maybe if therapy is the right choice for you, maybe BetterHelp is the place to do it. Because with over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on their 1.7 million client reviews. It's one way to get around the stigma is to do it at home, not have to feel that you are getting out of the house or in public. It's one of the ways to maybe get over it. Therapists at BetterHelp work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. And BetterHelp does the initial matchmaking work for you so you can focus on your own therapy goals without worrying about that. You just fill out a short questionnaire that helps you identify your needs and preferences. And then BetterHelp's over 12 years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. But if you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/filmcast. That's betterhelp.com/filmcast.
Devinder Hardwar, hit us up with something you've been watching this week.
Yeah, I forgot to mention this last week, but during my trip to New York, I finally got to see I Love Boosters, the new Boots Riley movie. And shout out to BAM, by the way, the Brooklyn Academy of Music, because they have a whole new theater building. It's wild. Like, I spent 10 years of my life going to like BAM's theaters. They have an older building with tiny screens and not like a great setup. There's a whole big ass new like building. It's a building like right. There was construction around there. It's built on top of an Apple store. It's like new and modern. It's great. So I love that BAM has like new screens and more screens out there. And this movie is a ton of fun. And it came to, like, I started to realize quickly while watching this movie that Boots Riley is essentially our new Pee Wee Herman. What if Pee Wee Herman had full power to, like, make adult stuff back, like his stand-up actually was more adult, but the full power, like the animation, the ingenuity, the imagination of Pee Wee's Playhouse is in all of Boots Riley's stuff. And I think that's kind of fun. And, you know, I really enjoyed this movie. I think it's more effective than I'm a Virgo, his Amazon series. It's about people who are stealing clothes from designers and reselling them. And they're also trying to find, like, a, you know, a purpose in their life, focused on Kiki Palmer's character, Corvette. It's fun. It's a ton of fun. It's like watching, like, a live action cartoon. Like, there, I feel like there are references to Katamari Damacy in this movie. Lucky Stanfield is back here in another Boots Riley thing. I cannot even describe to you what Lucky Stanfield does in this movie, because it's also wild and it does not seem like it exists in the same genre and universe and setup of, like, what I Love Boosters is. I think this movie is a ton of fun. Demi Moore is the villain. She's like a high-end designer who is, she's very rich. Like, there's a lot of, like, social commentary here, but she also lives in a, she lives in a new construction apartment building that is, that was built badly. So her entire apartment is, like, at a 40 degree angle, and they, like, through a combination of, like, set stuff and I'm sure, like, camera tricks, like, they kind of made that work. But I also, I think they had to build, like, a set to do that because things are moving badly.
Sounds like like being John Malkovich in the 7.5 floor, right? Yes. Situation.
Very much that, except it's not that hard to make a short ceiling. It is hard to make a floor that is, like, really slanted and, like, carts are, like, flying off and people are, like, walking at weird angles. There's just so much imagination in this stuff. So anyway, I'm sorry it took so long for me to see I Love Boosters. There weren't that many screenings near me, but I love that back in New York, I could just walk to a movie theater and there it is. So I loved I Love Boosters, and hopefully it's going to be hitting digital soon.
I'm pretty sure it's already on digital, Devendra.
This
has been something that I've been meaning to catch as well. But yeah, glad to hear you liked it. Sounds
it's great to see with a crowd. It's a great, it's like seeing, you know, sorry to bother you with a crowd. That movie goes places, and hearing the crowd react to the insanity of that movie goes a long way.
Yeah. All right. So that's I Love Boosters, something Devendra Hart has been watching this week, and I believe it is on video on demand. Mm-hmm. Jeff Cannata, you and I saw a very special movie this week.
Indeed, we did.
I'm gonna let you tee it up, man.
Yeah, this was the next night after I saw the Minions, and the same PR person was waiting outside the door on this one. I'm not joking. I'm not even
sweating.
Uh-huh.
Sweating uh-huh. now.
Yeah,
and I you were up. Like, "Well, that was very much like the Minions movie. This one."
she actually goes. So I walked out with, like, my eyes dazzling, my face bright. I was skipping my step. I come walking out, and she goes, "Oh, you liked it more than the Minions, huh?"
But also, I'm sorry for all these PR people. They're the pain sponges of this entire. Yeah, like, yeah. You got to take the bad. Don't take it personally. Yeah.
It sucks. Like, I do not. First of all, I love our PR people in Seattle. They're
same here.
Super professional.
Yeah.
I do not envy their jobs, especially because, look, I like to think that. The three of us, I'm just going to put this out there. I think the three of us, here is my sense, okay? You guys tell me if I'm wrong. My sense is the three of us understand our place in the media ecosystem, which is to say we are
very low,
less than nothing. We are
the gum on their shoes.
The gum on Ebert's shoe, basically. Like, Ebert wouldn't even scrape us off because it's been too much trouble, right? Like, we do not think we are anything. That opinion is not our opinion of ourselves is not shared by other people's opinion of themselves when they go to these screenings.
Probably, right? People with smaller audiences than we have.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Other people who have small audiences do not feel that way about their importance.
No, they do not.
The publicists need to deal with that as well. Anyway,
and not to mention the fact that they have to deal with all of the other just randos that come to the screenings, you know, they got their tickets. I got my tickets through through KC74. We're supposed to have 48 tickets all in a row, and they're like, "That's not really true." Yes.
They're called, they used to be, you know, they're called pass holes is what many people have described them as. Anyway.
Okay. We haven't even, I'm sure people listening are like, guys, you haven't even mentioned the name
what
of the
movie. What is the movie? What is the movie?
The movie is the new Olivia Wilde movie, The Invite. And this is going to be on my top 10 of the year. This is Jeff Cannata Catnett.
This is probably my number one movie of the year so far.
Wow, beating out Nirvana, the band, the
beating
show, the
beating out
movie.
Nirvana. I think this is so far my favorite film of 2026. Out of nowhere. Dude, like, I wasn't like I was anticipating it would be, you know, good. You
this
know?
So the first thing we have to say is Dave and I had a little text conversation back and forth about this, and it is really a priority for both of us that we don't explain what this movie is.
Correct.
Because the reveal of how this movie sort of unfolds like a flower is just a delight.
Yes, absolutely.
So my suggestion to you would be, dear listener, would be go see The Invite. It's a very adult movie, especially if you're married. If this is a movie about marriage and about sort of trying to make friends in marriage. Yeah. If you are a married person, I would highly recommend going to see this without knowing anything, without watching a trailer. This is a movie starring Olivia Wilde. She directed it as well with Seth Rogen, Penelope Cruz, and Edward Norton. And it really is a four-hander. This is, you know, the kind of movie I love. It's a play. It's basically a play. It's a single location. It's four characters, and they're just talking throughout the whole movie. But it is edge of your seat tension. It is hold your gut laughter. I mean, like I don't think I've laughed this hard in a movie in a long time. It is self-reflective. Like what would I do in this situation? Who are the, like, how do I feel about these things? It makes you think. It is profound. It makes you reevaluate your own marriage. At least it did for me. Like, it is just exquisite. Now, I should say this movie is a remake of a, I think, Spanish language movie called The People Upstairs. And the writing credit is the original writer of that movie. And Will McCormack and Rashida Jones has a writing credit on this. She's not in the movie at all.
Yep.
But the performances here are top to bottom flawless. Like, the casting is perfect casting. Everybody is great. The comedic timing's amazing. I was reading that they shot this movie in sequence like a play. So it literally, I mean, it is a perfect movie. I just absolutely loved it. I was buzzing when I came out of it. I want to see it again with my wife because she didn't get to come, and I was like, oh my God, you need to see this movie. It makes you squirm in your seat. It makes you laugh out loud. I got emotional at the end. It is fantastic. Go ahead, David.
I agree with everything Jeff said. I think I want to give a shout out to Olivia Wilde, not only as the director, but as one of the stars of this film. I think she has the hardest task as an actor in this film, personally.
I agree.
Seth Rogen's great as well, but like her performance here is so good, and also just very different than anything I've seen from her in a long time. Certainly very different from Don't Worry, Darling, right?
Second, it's like this is only her second movie, right?
Yeah, this is her second. Yeah. She also do Booksmart? So this would be her third movie, I think, right? But definitely an amazing follow-up from Don't Worry, Darling. This is a much better film than that, in my opinion.
I mean, I thought Don't Worry, Darling kind of got had some interesting moments, but this movie is like light years better than that movie.
Yeah. I think A24 is releasing this film. They've done this. They also did the drama earlier this year, and I think it's actually very smart the way they're doing it. They have essentially concealed the central premise of the film from the marketing.
With confusing titles too that maybe are a little similar. I don't know. In my head, I'm like, which one is the drama? Which one is the invite?
Which one's the invite? But they know that people that concealing the premise is going to get people talking about what's the invite about, that's going to drive this word of mouth. And I think they're doing a really good job of that. And so we will obviously not reveal like what the central premise is here on the podcast. I'll just say that in addition to everything Jeff said,
it's in all the trailers. So they are selling it.
I've seen the trailers, Devendra. I do not think, I think
well,
that they
haven't talked about what the trailers present, but okay.
Right. I think that the trailers do not fully capture what the experience of watching this movie is.
So, I'm sure there's more to it, but the sort of base setup is kind of interesting.
Perhaps. Yeah. So the base setup of like, it's these two couples that are meeting together for dinner is definitely in the trailers. Anyway, so the one thing I'll just say in addition to everything Jeff said, which I agree with, is that what I enjoy about the invite is how well it captures how quickly a conversation's tone can shift.
Yes. Right?
Like you're in a dinner party, everyone's having a great time, and then like someone says something off color or something happens that's like a little awkward, and then all of a sudden like the entire mood changes. And how often that can happen in the course of one night and how people like navigate that situation, I think is really compellingly done.
I also love how it captures the dynamic of couplehood and particularly marriage, in that you are at once aligned perfectly with a teammate and at odds with a person at the same time. You have this person who is your absolute teammate in life.
Yeah, yeah.
But also you are, you know, often your greatest antagonist at the same time, and both things can happen in parallel. And I love that the movie captures that dynamic in a way I have not seen done better.
I'm just going to put this out there, though. Like the one thing Jeff did a very beautiful opening on this movie. The one thing I'll just say that I disagree with Jeff about is don't go see this with your significant other unless you want to potentially have some very difficult conversations.
Oh, dude.
It sounds like a movie about difficult conversations.
The best way to see this movie. I'm telling you, I would describe this movie as a modern day Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. That's the feel. Like if you've seen the play or the movie Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, like that's what this movie is doing. It is looking at the dynamics of marriage in a really sort of bold and relentless way, and coming at it from a very modern take. It's not doing exactly the same thing, but it's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf for a modern generation, I think.
Fair enough. But yeah, there's some really difficult and raw emotions that are in this movie. And do not go see this movie expecting it to be a light romp. That's all I will say.
But it's so funny. It's so funny. Like it is, did you not guffaw many times?
Jeff, I said I agreed with everything you said except the lightness with which you recommended go see this with your significant other or wife or spouse or whatever.
Do it.
Like I
do
just
it.
Think,
Jeff wants to see relationships implode.
Yes, just like, exactly.
Really
that's
delicate
kind of
relationship.
Poof, that's kind of my sense, right? That's movie. My wow. sense. Anyway, okay, the invite. It's one of our
steel sharpens steel, Chen. That's the way you must
but also like I said. The weaker ones will not survive.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
yes.
That's
thank
what we're
you,
saying.
Devendra.
That is. Should not your like your sword being quenched in the fires of Mount Doom? Should it not?
Maybe
be
you want
tested?
Your relationship to be over. I know people who have a hard time breaking up with their partners.
Yeah,
this is potentially a way.
Do you want that potentially? Yeah. Anyway. So
this movie is gold. It's gold.
Here's what I'm learning. Jeff has an extremely healthy bulletproof relationship with his that can stand up to any amount of scrutiny and adversity is kind of
well that said I did
which,
not
Jeff,
see it
I'm
with
so
my
happy
life.
For you I'm
I just
so
wish
happy.
I had I wish I had I would give anything to have seen this for the first time with my wife because I'm gonna see this again knowing everything when I watch it with my wife and I wish we had both been discovering it at the same time.
Yeah.
Would have been so much better.
I would expect that we will probably do some kind of After Dark or some conversation on this after, you know, the movies come out. It's been in limited release and it goes wide this weekend. It'll be a big test of like, can this movie do well in the mass market audience? But Jeff and I certainly both think that it deserves it. So the movie is The Invite, and it is something Jeff Cannata and I have been watching this week. Let's take another break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this. All right, guys, let's move on. I had a chance to watch Toy Story 5. I got to see Toy Story 5 with my nephew. It was his first ever movie in a theater.
How old is he?
I think he's four and a half, five. He's very young, and I will say he did a great job. Like he got restless at a couple points and was looking around. I will say, by the way, also a lot more reading in this Toy Story 5 in this Toy Story movie than I think was necessary in other movies.
Huh.
Sure.
Like they use this iPad called Lilypad, this iPad like device, and like a lot of the plot hinges around text that appears on that screen. Whereas I don't think that was necessarily true of previous Toy Story movies. So I don't think he can, I don't know what his reading ability is, but either way, like I definitely don't think he can read that fast. Like there's a bunch of text that appear like super fast on screen in the movie. And I have to say, this is a week where we are really simpatico on a lot of things. Cause I think you guys were completely right on this one. Both of you, I think, were considerably cooler on this than Jermaine Lucier was on when he appeared on this podcast. And I have to say, I think this movie really bummed me out because, but not for the same reasons. It bummed me out because this has now just become another entry in the Toy Story franchise. Like Toy Story movies used to be like huge events of like, oh wow, like they're elevating the art form with this version of this next installment. And I thought this one was just totally okay. I know there are some emotional moments in this. I'm not saying that the movie doesn't say anything about what it's like. Like the toys, by the way, for those who have not grasped the central metaphor of these films, is that the toys are like parents, right? The toys, you're like,
they're more like guardian angels, really.
Guardian angels, like, parents, whatever, guardians. But, you know, the kids are a metaphor for kids, and the toys are a metaphor. The toys are a metaphor. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Trenchant analysis over here.
This is the insight that I'm bringing into this.
His TED Talk is very short.
The kids
what is the lily pad like?
Stay with me. The kids are kids, but the toys are like parents, basically. And so, and the idea of what is the function of parents and kids' lives and so on is brought to the fore again. I did like that this movie centers Jesse.
It's an episode of Toy Story.
It feels like an episode. It feels like an episode.
Yeah.
And
it's the Jesse episode. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a Jesse episode. And Jesse is great as a character. And I think, you know, I'm glad that she got center stage in this one. I think, you know, when I think of Toy Stories 1 through 3, those were like the real ones that helped to define my movie going life during those years. And they were all transcendent. Like they all had moments that I think about to this day. And I just don't think that's going to happen with this one. And in fact,
of all early Pixar too, like the way they built stories was excruciating and difficult. And they would like remake movies and completely change third acts.
Right.
And like this one just feels like, first draft, we're done, right? We can move on. Yeah.
All the stuff with the extra buzzes I just saw. Yeah. Like technically it's impressive, but I was like, why am I watching this? What is the point of any of this? You know?
Well, people complained there was not enough buzz in Toy Story 4. Mm-hmm. And Pixar is like, well, here you go.
Yes.
Mouth.
Have as many buzzes as you can
on the buzz.
Yeah. And so the movie is not bad. It's not like a terrible film. It's just it's a huge bummer because these used to be massive cinematic events, and now it's just another movie now.
It is the inverse of the Minions and Monsters effect, where the rest of the franchise is so bad that this one seems good, and it's the opposite for Toy Story, where it's like everything else is so good that this one, which is not bad, seems bad.
Right. Perfectly said, Jeff. I think... here's a big sign that the movie isn't as brilliant as the previous ones. Most other Toy Story movies can reduce me to a blubbering mess.
Right.
Didn't cry a single time during this one. Didn't cry
There's
a single
one
time.
Moment. There's one moment.
There's
here,
one moment that's like kind of emotional. Forced. I'm like, yeah. This is the time when I'm supposed to cry. And I didn't. I was just like, I'm too annoyed with this movie to
They're
cry right now.
Flashing the big cry now Pixar sign at you. Yeah.
It's annoying. We were at a 4th of July thing at a with a friend and at this restaurant, and my daughter and their daughter are very close in age, and they were playing with we were at their neighborhood and at their house, and they had old Woody and Buzz toys, and they were playing with them sort of as we were waiting for our table at this restaurant, and this other little kid came up and had wide-eyed and was watching them, and the mom came around. She's like, oh, he just really loves Toy Story. He just was watching your daughter play with her. And I was like, oh, hey, have you seen Toy Story 5? And he's like, yeah. I want a lily pad. And I went, you missed the point of that movie.
Every kid says that. Every kid coming out of this movie, that's what they say.
That's a problem. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, like you guys, I also found the way that this movie handled tech to be, I'll just say, completely unsatisfying. Like, I don't think it has pretty much anything interesting to say about.
Well, it settles on the sort of like reality we're living in. It's like, you can't not have it. Unfortunately, you could try, but
it doesn't have anything incisive to say. But I think at their core, the Toy Story movies have always been consumerist in nature, right? Even though
every Pixar movie, every Disney movie, come on.
Well, I'd say Toy Story specifically, because it's literally about toys. Like, it's literally about objects toys. You buy.
Yes.
I think that even though it is a metaphor for parenthood or being a parent and stuff, it's still like ultimately about like, hey, the things you buy and own have meaning.
Sure.
That's really the core. People forget 18 layers down. That's really what it is. So
Pixar was co-founded by Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
So don't forget that.
That's right.
Ties into everything.
A guy who like is really good at selling you stuff. So anyway, hugely disappointing. Was not a big fan of Toy Story 5. And one thing that also is clear that should be noted, by the way, is they've stopped pretending that they're not going to make more of these things. You know, like, I remember, like, at the end of, like, Toy Story 2 and 3 and even 4, they're like, and this is the grand finale. Like, this is it. Goodbye forever. And now they're like, these guys are all going to be back. Like, we're all going to be back next year.
The end of this one is like, see you on Tuesday.
Yep, you know? See you later. Bye, guys. Be back soon. So, anyway, I'm glad that they've come to terms with that. All right, Toy Story 5, something else I've been watching this week. Devendra Hardwar, hit us up with something you watched this week.
Yeah, I've been checking out a show that's been very popular on Netflix. It's called I Will Find You, Harlan Coben's I Will Find You.
Yes, this is the number one show on Netflix, according to their rankings.
And I can see why. Because I would describe the show as The Fugitive for Dummies. That's what it is. That's all it is. And it's like, the
one
premise is kind
many.
Of interesting.
If only they had Dime Store Harrison Ford. Oh, wait, they do. It's Sam Worthington.
It's Sam Worthington. But yes, exactly. It's Dime Store everything all the way down. The premise is Sam Worthington is a man who is serving life in prison for brutally murdering his son with a hammer. Brutally murdering him to the point where the body cannot be identified. He says he didn't do it. And in the very first episode, early on, his former sister-in-law, played by Britt Lower from the Apple TV show, from Severance, she shows him a photo and was like, this looks like it could be your kid, just 4 or 5 years later. And it sets off a chain of events that sets him on the path to escape from jail and try to figure out the great conspiracy here. It is perfectly watchable. It's very cromulent, has a great cast. If you like seeing, the show has Shia McBride. He doesn't show up till the second episode, but Shia McBride, if you grew up watching him in positions of authority, yelling at people, I did. I quite enjoyed that. Shia McBride from Pushing Daisies. You miss a bit of that attitude. I think that would appeal to you, Jeff, but also like, what was it? Boston Public, I think, like one of the shows, like he was in there. I love a Shia McBride. So like, this is great. For some reason, not introduced until the second episode. My thing with the show is like, it's enjoyable. It is very much a cheap airport thriller turned into a TV show, and everything is too goddamn easy. That's the thing. The thing about The Fugitive that is so interesting is that Harrison Ford's character is like scrambling. Everyone's against him. Like, it's so hard for him to like make any dent and get out, like the entire chase. That is the point of that movie and what makes it so compelling. And even the, even Tommy Lee Jones' character, like who we eventually like kind of learn to like during the movie, even he like has like very little sympathy for this guy. In this show, everyone is out to help this dude. And it gets to be kind of annoying. Like, if you're gonna, if you're, how do you break out of a maximum security prison? Good thing you're very good friends with the guy in charge. Oh no, I need to figure out, like, get a lot of information. Good thing your former sister-in-law is very much on your side and will do illegal things to help you investigate this murder. It's a lot of coincidences. It's a lot of like very easy things. And I think that ultimately like just lowers the intelligence level of what this mystery ultimately is. This is one of those shows where I'm like, I am kind of interested in seeing where this goes, but I'm not interested enough to sit down and just focus on the show. So this is very much a Netflix. You're on the exercise machine. You're doing something else. This is a Netflix show I will put on a tablet while I'm doing dishes. And I listen to it half like a podcast, not missing anything. Missing nothing, because the production of the show also kind of looks like garbage. So you don't actually miss much by watching by not watching it. But
Devendra is just insulting every conceivable category of people. Not only the people who watch the show, also the people who worked on the show. Should feel better.
I mean, listen, you're gonna have the thick skin if you make anything. But my job here is to judge the things and not be friendly. Like I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Like, that's,
you know, I'm not saying you did a bad job. Yeah. I'm not saying you did a bad job. I'm just saying the end result is a bit less than. That's all. But the show is perfectly fine. I can see why it's popular. Like, it's easy to take down. It doesn't challenge you. There aren't like any huge twists. But man, the thing that irks me with mysteries is like when the coincidences just start to like pile on each other to the point where the main characters just being like, they're like in Disneyland with the pass that gets you through all the lines, all the friction, all the hard stuff. That is the juice. That is why we watch The Fugitive. That is why we care about stories like this. So it is just kind of funny, like how much a show goes to like, it's, you know, somebody will help you. People will give up their lives or put themselves in danger or potentially go to jail just to help this person who has escaped from jail for killing their child. It's just wildly unbelievable at times, but sounds it's like, a fun watch.
Sounds like the Running Man movie we just remake.
You know, I would say it's less frustrating than the Running Man because I didn't expect much from this. I expect more from Edgar Wright. I expect nothing from something called Harlan Coben's whatever. So, you know, keep your expectations in check. It is perfectly enjoyable. Does not deserve your full focus. I'll put it that way.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear you didn't like it. Here's a question for you, Devendra.
No, you did not listen to anything I just said.
He's saying he liked it, but don't watch it.
Perfectly enjoyable. Do not give it your entire attention. Okay. This is turn off half of your brain, like, and allocate it to this show. And the other half of your brain, do something useful. That journey is kind of worth it, but don't. It does not deserve 100% of your brain. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Sorry, I misinterpreted that. Here's
you understand? Listen, sometimes you came up with the phrase "a good sit."
Yeah.
It's a good sit.
Is it a good sit? Okay, I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell based on. All right, here's a question for you.
Devendra is saying it's a good second activity.
It's a good third activity.
It's a good third order level. It's like, you know, the buzzing sound in the background you hear sometimes, like tinnitus. It's a good that, basically.
I want to know what happens with this mystery. I wish it was more compelling throughout. That's all. Mm-hmm.
Would you ever put it on 1.5 speed, Devendra? You know, is that a thing you'd ever do?
That's not. Then it's like, what are we?
What are we doing here?
A complete waste of time.
Yeah. This is just that's the ultimate insult. Here's a question I was going to ask: was when you watch it while you're doing dishes, like, I'm just curious. This is a thing that I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. I know other people do this. They watch shows while they're doing dishes because dishes can take like 10, 15 minutes, up to 20 minutes.
Yeah, you're loading the washer, you're scrubbing things.
So what is your like setup for that? Like, is it Do you have the iPad on a stand? Is it in the case?
iPad is like in the window in front of my iPad, or sometimes even just iPhone, because it's fine. You just see what's going on. But iPad is usually just on the window right in, like right above my kitchen sink. So I have like a good view of it while I'm doing stuff. Yeah. And then if I look away for a second, for some shows, for this show, don't matter. Don't matter. And then I listen in on an AirPod. So like you can
You're using AirPods. Got it.
One AirPod all the time when doing chores.
One AirPod. Yeah. Wow.
One AirPod. Two is just a little too much unless I'm like sitting and focusing on a movie or music or something. I have to hear what's happening.
Yeah. You ever thought about like bone conducting earphones?
It's a potential thing, but you want something that's in your ear, because when you're making dish noises like scrubbing and the clamoring of dishes, bone conduction is not strong enough to get through that.
Okay,
you need to do the Devendra AirPod scale. Is this a one AirPod, show or two AirPod show?
Everything is one AirPod.
Everything is
one AirPod. Is the way to go through life, because you want to be situationally aware. If when I'm home with the kids making dinner or something, I want to hear something, but I also have to hear if my son is trying to kill my daughter. So I need to I need to have one AirPod. But the two AirPod mode happens when it's like, sometimes as a parent, it's just like, it's overwhelming. The kids are overwhelming. There's too much noise. If somebody else is watching my kids, two AirPods, noise canceling.
Yeah.
Focus.
Someone
focus
else is watching on what's your kids in front is the best of you. Version of it's, that.
That's great. Yeah.
But if you asked your son if he was trying to kill your daughter, he said, no, there was a one-armed man in here who did it. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Jeff, do you
and
do
I said, I don't care.
Yeah. Do you do washing dishes, iPad, iPhone setup in your house? No?
No. I'm not guy. I'm not the watch
Right, because of the sanctity of the viewing experience, right?
I'm not trying to be holier than thou here. It's just that's kind of my
You're
jam.
Not trying. You just are, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just living. It comes so easy to me. No, I will certainly do an audio-only experience doing chores.
Yeah.
I love folding laundry or something and listening to an audiobook or podcast.
What if, Jeff, a show is basically audio-only? What if it's essentially making, a radio play that you're listening to? That's all I'm proposing here.
Yeah.
I think I just like the freedom of being able to walk around when I'm doing the chore or not having to look. I don't know.
You can do that too. But yes, I certainly hear you, Jeff.
Yeah.
But yeah, Devendra, usually it's an iPhone and just placed face up with headphones on while I'm doing the dishes. That's often
we live in a world with too much content, and unfortunately our job is to consume and analyze that content. Yep. So you gotta do what you can. But
totally.
There are things where I'm like, oh, you are so I would never do this to you. Widows Bay, I would never do this. Baby, I love you. I love you, Widows Bay.
Yeah.
Lestat, the vampire Lestat. I would never do this.
Yeah. Right.
That's the dishes sitting in my wait, home vampire theater. Lestat. The dishes can wait, baby.
Dishes can wait. You need a 120-inch screen. You need my surround sound set. You need my full undivided attention. I'm not pulling out phones during these shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say that one thing that I've been doing a lot recently is I'll set up like iPhone stands around the house strategically.
This is ridiculous.
Right?
Okay.
No. Yeah. So like, so I have an iPhone stand.
I thought I was master of the game, but it seems like I have been one out.
I have an iPhone stand on my sink, like in my bathroom sink when I'm brushing my teeth. Mm-hmm. I have an iPhone stand in the shower.
You don't have like one of the sticky
I have an
thingies?
iPhone stand on the, I just put a stand on like my kitchen island so that I can like cook while
they,
watching
they make
like,
the
YouTube
sticky
stuff.
Thingies that you could plug onto like any glass or whatever. Mm-hmm. I use those occasionally.
You need, what you need is the headband with the thing sticking out. Like, you know how like the recumbent bike guys have the rear view mirror thing?
Right.
That's what you need. So you just can walk around your house.
Yeah.
With
the, like the Wall-E setup, basically.
Yeah,
that's what the new smart glasses are for. So if you had like the Meta displays, you
I gotta
can play
do the
some
smart
videos
glasses.
There. Or the X-Reels. I love the X-Reels. You could conceivably watch something in the X-Reels and then while doing other chores.
Yeah.
It's just tied to your phone.
I mean, it's absurd.
We're getting there.
That's I Will Find You on Netflix. It's something Devendra Harto has been watching. And he
I will
likes
sort
it,
of
and
watch
he
you.
Likes it, kind of. Is
yeah,
the, is
I
the
will
review.
Sort of watch you, is what I tell the show.
Let's take one last break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this. Jeff Cannata, bring us home.
All right, so you were mentioning core memories for my son.
Yes.
And we had one this week, guys. We had the moment.
Oh.
My son is 9. He will turn 10 September 5th. And he had his first run out of the theater in fear moment.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. My wife, we got home. This happened yesterday. We got home from our little travel. We went out of town for 4th of July. We got back. Everybody was kind of tired. We got back early in the day. My wife said, let's watch a movie. And she got it in her head to watch. I kind of want you guys to guess, but you'll never guess. Well, maybe you would.
Can you give us some hints?
I mean, I think you would guess it because it is a potentially scary movie that my wife might not register as being that scary. She was like, we got to watch the classics. This is what she would consider a classic. And I support that. But I think I was a little more skeptical that it was time. It is a big franchise that has had many, many sequels. Mm-hmm. Not all of them very good.
Nightmare on Elm Street time, baby.
No, it's for not the 9-year old.
Police Academy.
Police Academy? Is that what you said?
Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Ghostbusters.
You think my wife wanted my son to watch Police Academy?
I was just, Jeff, I was going by the hints you were giving, okay?
Okay.
You were saying many entries.
A classic.
Classic, funny movie with many entries.
I didn't say funny.
Sorry for trying those movies.
I think you misheard me. I never said funny.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
I think you misheard that.
I misheard
so I can understand why you went there, but I never said funny.
Okay.
It's a classic with franchise with many sequels.
Okay.
Not funny.
Ghostbusters.
All right.
Yeah. No.
Well, that still describes Police Academy, by the way. FYI. But okay,
yes. I don't know. I would consider it a classic.
I didn't hear anybody laughing.
Okay. The movie was Jurassic Park.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Perfect. Oh, yeah. I want to do it, too. I'm ready to
By the way, Jurassic Park, perfect movie for kids. Like, The Invite is a perfect movie for married couples. Just want to put that out there.
So,
this is Jeff's judgment here.
So we started watching it in the living room in broad daylight.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
And they got 2 minutes in and I was like, no, this is not how we're not watching Jurassic Park. We have a movie theater in our house. We're not watching Jurassic Park for the first time.
Sometimes you got to lay down the law like a man,
right.
Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you, Devinder. Thank you. So we got everybody down to the movie theater. We got popcorn in laps. We're ready to rock. Put on Jurassic Park. And my son was eerily quiet for most of the movie. Didn't squirm, didn't complain, didn't anything. The Tyrannosaurus Rex chase must go faster.
Yes.
He gets out of his chair, runs out of the room crying.
The movies! The power of the movies! Yeah.
He would be mortified if he knew I was telling the entire world this. But
and yet
runs upstairs, throws himself on the couch, pulls a blanket over his head, like terrified. And I'm like, Jack,
yeah,
this is exactly what the filmmaker wanted to happen. You don't understand. There's nothing to be ashamed of.
You were seeing a master at work.
This is what this is the intended feeling. You're supposed. This is what did they say? What did they say? Spine tingling. Your spine is tingling. We did it. No.
And yet, strangely, I feel like he might not have been comforted by his dad screaming that at him.
Not comforted. would not go back to watch the rest of the movie. So the rest of the movie remained unfinished. But I feel like this is going to be one of those core memories of like.
It's a great core memory. Look, listen to a lot of like filmmakers talk about the things they grew up doing. And it is being terrified by something happening while they're stuck in a movie theater. But that feeling, that emotion does something to you, too. So it's not a bad thing, Jeff.
I agree.
Traumatizing core memories in 1 week. That's pretty good, Jeff.
I'm killing it on the fatherhood thing. that scene, you know, I don't think we recall the Laura Dern of it all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because she is screaming in terror in that scene.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, you know, cool guy scientist going, must go faster. And I remember like downshifting and I remember zooming in on the rear view mirror and objects are closer than they appear. All the cool stuff. I did not recall how Laura Dern is losing her shit in that scene and communicating to a child, this is terrifying right now. And I think it got to him, man. It got to him. And so.
Well, you've got the full surround sound. You're watching on like a giant projector screen. Like this is dark. The full cinematic effect. And that
no
is
light
such
in that
a perfect
room whatsoever. No ambient light at all. It's pitched.
Perfect
scene. Having the movie theater experience. And it, you know, it got him. Mm-hmm. It got him good. So, yeah, that's,
congrats,
that's what happened yesterday. Congrats.
This will either be a moment in therapy or a moment of inspiration for him in the future.
I have a guess as to which one that's going
to
be.
I'm willing to take that bet.
Yep. I will
you
say
know what?
That the... Go ahead, Dundra.
Kids got to be scared. Kids got to be a little scared sometimes. Because
I agree.
The thing, it is true that we have parents, especially our current generation of parentage, we dote on the kids. We are supporting them all the way. We are super protective. People say kids should just go out and play. You send your kid out to the playground by themselves. Somebody will call the cops on you because that shit has happened like several times.
Yeah.
So like we are in a weird protective bubble, and I do want to make sure my kids are feel safe and feel protected and don't go through traumatic things that I went through. Because what was normal for parenting in the 80s and 90s was kind of not cool at certain times, but also the world is terrifying.
Yeah.
You gotta learn a little bit of something. Yeah.
I'm not gonna sit him down in front of Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm not gonna like intentionally traumatize a kid. I'm not gonna show The Exorcist to my kids.
You've got a couple of years.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like Jurassic Park is in that place of it's just scary enough that it's like, yeah, that's kind of that's what I kept telling him. That's the feeling. That's the intended feeling. You were like, you were in the movie. You were feeling it. Like that's like, understand the artistry of, I mean, I didn't say that, but that's how I feel. It's like maybe on a certain level.
Cannot you appreciate the mise-en-scene?
Did you see how he stood into his close-up? Incredible.
The rippling
of
the water
and how it represents the ideas, the complex interplay of ideas in this sequence.
The sound design of the T-Rex's roar and how that sends a chill down your spine. Like they're humans did that. AI didn't do that. Humans did
That's
that.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
I'll just say that for me, the scene that would be most scary, like I remember watching Jurassic Park as a kid. And I think the scene that was probably most scary was when the lawyer, Gennaro, got ripped in half by the T-Rex on the toilet. Like that was, and I remember it was controversial at the time. I remember like reading articles and them saying like, hey, like a lot of families are going to see Jurassic Park, but it's actually really scary. And then there's like a list of scenes from the movie that were really scary. And
dismemberments.
That was one of the scenes. And I remember at the time being like, yeah, this is like kind of upsetting. I don't know if it's okay that I'm watching this right now, you know?
Well, the scene that he didn't get to is the scene in the kitchen. Yeah. Kitchen.
The kitchen. The
which
kitchen
I think is
a perfect
way
one.
Scarier. And that's what I,
cause
that was
just
watching,
kids, no grownups. Yeah,
exactly. It's happening to kids. It's slow. It's terrifying. It plays like a horror movie. You see the
it's
reflections,
all a horror movie.
they're breathing hard. Like the must go faster is kind of exciting. The kitchen scene is a horror scene, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm kind of glad I didn't get that far.
In stages. But I feel like 9 is a good age. Like I've been thinking, when will I do this with my daughter? Because she likes to see these things. She is 7 now. I'm thinking like 8 or 9 feels like pretty good. And you listen to the kid, and if they run away, that tells you something. But also, it's good to challenge them sometimes. Like I think that's all fine. That's how we do it. Something we used to talk about is like, remember Angel Films, the whatever the studio was that was like censoring things and censoring swear words, censoring all sorts of stuff. And it was always bullshit at the time. But it's also like, for a lot of my childhood, I was watching these movies as their censored TV versions. And that at least made them like vaguely kid safe. And now I'm like, I kind of wish I could watch some of these movies, at least just like turn down the swear words so we can enjoy the other stuff with my kids. Like I was watching, we watched Men in Black for July 4th. I was like, let's get a bit into Men in Black. Certainly the better movie compared to Independence Day. And like the first 3 or 4 words of that movie is like, oh shit. And then damn it or something. Like it's just like people swearing at themselves in ways. And like, I don't know. There were ways we made things kid friendlier, but it was because it was just for TV. And that's how I watched stuff. It's something I'm thinking about. Yeah. I wish we had the technology to be like, can I make this just a little kid friendlier? Can I tone this down a little bit? I don't know.
Well, you know, we're doing the classics now. So next up for my kids is the Police Academy movies, because those are essential.
And then Revenge of the Nerds, just all the troubling 80s comedies. All of them.
The best part of the best version of those edited things is The Sopranos aired on A&E for a short period of time. You can imagine what a soprano, like a TV safe version of The Sopranos was.
Sure. The Lebowski edits, which I think are now like memes.
Yeah. The Mr. Show with Bob and David, the sketch comedy show, did a sketch that has stayed with me forever since, where it was their version of Goodfellas, but done for regular TV. It was called Pallies, I think, or just a couple of Pallies. But he would be like, that's a bunch of shoe. And then it'll be, you know, it was like, you're a dentist. And it was just like these wild sub ins. And then there's a part where he extends his hand and gives him the middle finger. And it's like a cutout of just a thumbs up. Mm-hmm. It's very funny sketch.
Amazing. All right. Jurassic Park, something Jeff Cannata has been watching with his family this week. And that is going to bring us to the end of what we've been watching. All right, folks, time to do some weekly plugs. We're going to do weekly plugs. Weekly plugs, the part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. I want to throw a shout out to my Instagram page at instagram.com/DaveChensky. That's Dave Chensky. I'm posting short form videos across all of my channels, of which Instagram is one. And if you want to stay up to date with my thoughts and commentary on the latest that are going on, that's going on in the world of movies and pop culture, be sure to follow me on Instagram. Again, instagram.com/DaveChensky. That's Dave Chensky. Devinder Hardwar, your weekly plug.
Yeah, check out the Engadget podcast. I had a great chat with Jessica Conta, one of our reporters who has been testing out Valve's Steam Machine, and she talks about her experience with it, what she likes, what she doesn't, how freaking expensive it is, and we just talk about, like, philosophically, like, what Valve is doing here. It's a great chat. And also, I was asked to talk about 3D TVs and why they failed, so I spent some time putting together a piece about that. That just went live on Engadget, so check that out as well.
Guys, I just want to say I feel bad about this week's joke. All right, I don't.
Just
I'm not
this week's.
I'm not proud of this. Okay. One. I'm not proud of this one. Usually, I'm like, I don't feel bad. I don't feel actively bad, but this one I feel pretty bad about. Okay.
You don't put the Dave Chen seal of approval.
That's right.
On this one.
This is like not like Nintendo disavow cartridge. All knowledge of this one.
Yeah.
Did you hear about how Ben and Jerry's invented a new type of martial arts? Did you hear about how Ben and Jerry invented a new type of martial arts? Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
Wow.
Oh, I am shuddering at where that's headed. My video game podcast, DLC, perhaps you have heard about the end of physical media, which is upon
Boo.
Us. We cover it this week, episode 659. Steve Watts from GameSpot joins us to get into Sony's announcement that they are ending physical media. The PlayStation has been a Blu-ray player for the masses in its lifespan. It sounds like physical media is gone, and we get into all the ramifications of what that means. It's not good, ladies and gentlemen. But it's an interesting discussion, and we talk about some really great video games along the way. Check it out at dlcpod.com.
I want to throw a shout out for patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can get ad-free episodes, exclusive access to bonus After Dark episodes. Recently, we're discussing all kinds of things. There's a saga going on with Jeff Cannata's roof that, unironically, I think you will find quite riveting. And also a conversation about Widow's Bay season one finale we recently had on this week's After Dark. All that and more, patreon.com/filmpodcast. Of course, we never want you to donate if it in any way causes you financial hardship. You can always support us for free by leaving a star rating for us at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to everyone who supports the show in any way, whether it's leaving star ratings for us for free or subscribing to the Patreon, or just listening and telling your friends about us. We really appreciate it. Let's get to our review of The Furious.
You're looking for someone.
So am I.
My wife went missing.
Cookie dough. Cookie dough.
Hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Like taekwondo, you know, okay. With cookie. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry, guys. That was...
Wow.
I feel bad
it's
about
like
that
you're
one.
You're not even... You're just going to take the first one that you come across, Dave? Is that...
I went through 59 jokes, and that was the best one. You know, when I look on these joke sites, a lot of them are extremely sexist and racist.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys remember like, oh, a rabbi, a priest, and a blonde walk into a bar. And it's like, oh, okay. I don't think I could tell this on the podcast, right? Like, anyway. So that was the best one. Welcome to the Filmcast review of The Furious. I'm going to read the plot summary of this movie from IMDb. A father fights fiercely against ruthless kidnappers to save his abducted daughter. End quote. Now, this movie is a martial arts film, and most of the movie is, in fact, fighting. There's not that much plot, and so I do think we probably won't have a separate spoiler section. I do think you should probably just expect we will be talking about the entire film right from the jump. But you can interpret the fact that we are talking about it at all as a vote of high confidence in this film that we think you should see it and it is worth checking out. Now, the question is just to what degree it is worth checking out. Is this one of the greatest martial arts films of all time? Does it beat other films like The Raid and The Raid 2, Barenthal? Let's talk about it. Devendra Hardwar, you've already discussed the movie a little bit, but let's go to you first. What did you think of The Furious? I know you had said you might go see it again this week for our review. Did you, in fact, get a chance to do that?
I wish I had time because they started limiting screenings quite a bit over the last week. So
yeah,
it was tough for you to potentially see it, Jeff. So I didn't get to see it again, which is a shame, but I cannot wait to revisit this movie over and over again. I do think this is one of the greatest martial arts movies I've ever seen. It is, like I said before, it feels like the thing we've been waiting for since the Raid movies. And as much as I like the John Wick movies, those are about more than just martial arts, right? There's like gun action, there's car chases, there's big other stunts. And I just love the art of dudes punching and kicking other dudes. And in that art form, I've seen many in my life, and this movie just does things. There are moments where, I think I was saying, it was just me and like another guy in the theater just like gasping out loud. At certain moves, at the way Xie Miao will feint a kick and like turn it into something else. The way the sheer tonnage of destruction on the human body in this movie and the way people move to create that destruction, it is beautiful to behold. And this also feels like the logical conclusion of movies of this type, which I think Taken was like the one that really got people into this, although it's a very common like plot device. But Taken was so compelling, it turned Liam Neeson, an aging Liam Neeson, into an action star. And now we have something like, what if Taken, but with, you know, people who could actually move like freaking, furious martial arts masters. And that's essentially what we have here. Freaking love this movie. I love like the callbacks to many other great movies too. Like it opens with a reporter kicking butt, the actress playing her, Ji Jia Yanin from Chocolate. Xie Miao himself like was in Jet Li movies back in the day. There's video of him of Jet Li just saying like, good job, man, because he was the son in My Father's a Hero. I think they did a couple other movies together. So that it's just cool. It's just great to like see like, oh, I've watched these folks for so long and we've got here. I've loved Joe Taslim forever. I've loved Kenji Tanigaki's like stunt work forever. This feels like such a great moment for them. I love this movie.
Jeff Cannata, really curious what you thought of The Furious.
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought of The Furious is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear it, Jeff.
It's great. And the moment I knew it, a car drove away to pursue it. He ran down the street in flip-flops and bare feet, which made my feet hurt just to view it.
Nicely done, Jeff.
There's a lot of things in this movie that look painful, none more so than sprinting across pavement in bare feet. But I digress. Everything Devendra said, agreed 100%. The thing that's so wild about this movie is I have not seen as many martial arts films as Devendra Hardwar, but I've seen a lot. I love them, and I have seen many, many martial arts films in my life. And you get to a point, I think, when you start to think, well, there isn't anything new you can do with the human body in choreographing a fight scene. Like, they can still be thrilling and fun and exciting, but they're not going to look new, not going to look revolutionary. And then this movie comes along, and it's like, oh, we thought of ways to use the human body as a weapon that just have never been filmed before, that are just innovative. Like, it's innovating movement. It's wild how the human body in this movie is used as a weapon in ways I've never seen, like catapulting itself. There are so many times when a body is lifted off the ground in this movie and kind of brought horizontal, and that state is sort of used. It's hard to describe it. You have to see this movie. It is wild how the fight choreography just feels fresh and you know, I keep saying the same thing over and over.
I would say that the way I would describe it, because I thought about how to talk about it, the way I would describe it is that people in the movie use their own body weight as a weapon.
Their own body weight. That's a good way of saying it.
Body weight in a way that I haven't seen before.
But also, like, in the act of fighting, there's like lifts. It's almost like dance. There's like lifts that happen that you don't usually see. You'll see people jumping in martial arts films a lot. You'll see, you know, wire work even. But like lifting, like bodies sort of like pressed together and almost wrestling, but then lifting and, you know, creating forms as multiple bodies that you don't usually see in movies. Mm. It's really, really, really cool. And there is a sequence in this movie where four people are fighting at once, and then a fifth dude shows up. And you kind of like, it boggles the mind how anyone choreographed it. Like the moment, and it lasts so long, and there is such a fluidity to it, but a complexity to the layers of movement. Like, it's not, when I say four people are fighting, you've seen that in a movie before. Two people fight and another two people fight, and they're sort of happening in the same, you know, like, this guy's fighting that guy and that guy's fighting that guy. No. Four people are all fighting each other at the same time. And they are, it is bouncing back and forth between who's fighting who and what move is landing and how they're combining forces and spreading apart. And it is just mind-boggling.
And then a wild card arrives who you don't know. Who are they fighting?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Then fifth guy shows. I'm like reeling at four people all in this jumble of fight. And then fifth guy shows up and he's fighting in a completely different style where he's just Ram Man.
Different style. You know?
I live for that split screen moment though. Like that moment, the moment where the movie just like breathes like eye line, split screen five ways. And then you take a breath because you will not be able to take a breath for another 20 minutes.
Exactly. You will not be able to take a breath. We know that. Yeah. It is. It's a triumph. The fight scenes are uniformly spectacular, but different and one up themselves. And there's just so many cool things. And it's, you know, from a plot perspective, as you said, David, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's very, very bare bones. It's, we have a goal. Let's get at any cost, and we're going to have an uneasy alliance, and let's rock. It's not rocket science. But I will say, if I was going to level a complaint at this movie, and really, I don't need to, because it's the fight scenes are so good that there's, I have no reservations in recommending this movie wholeheartedly. But if I was going to level a complaint at this movie, it would be that the villain makes no damn sense. There's a sequence where he decides to murder his father-in-law. And it's like, what was the plan, man? What's the plan there? And he like when he accidentally hits his wife, it's like, now you're worried, but like, what was the good version of how this plays out? You know what I mean? You're going to murder your father-in-law and all his friends and then stroll out to your bride and be like, hey, baby, wacky meeting in there.
Things just got a little out of hand. I love a movie, though, where it's like the straight-laced, nerdy-looking guy is just like the bad businessman for most of the movie. And then by the end, he's like, oh, he's kicking ass, too. Yeah. Oh, surprise ass kicker over here. Yeah.
I agree. He's fun, and the fight scenes in are fun. But that sequence in the boardroom where he just flips out and bites people's hands off—it's like, what? Okay, I get it. The movie's just like, we're at balls to the wall right now. So okay, I'm with you. But from a plot perspective, it makes no damn sense. But it's a minor
complaint. I love that conversation though, because it's like, clearly this is like a rich family that's made business through all sorts of illegal things. And now they're like, you're trafficking children. Yeah. I can live with the drugs, the drug running, and the weapons running. But I will draw the line of children. And that is kind of, I don't know. I found that really funny.
Yeah. I love this movie as well. I think this is going to be one of the movies that pushes the art form forward. This is going to be one of the movies that innovates in terms of not only the style of martial arts that are shown, but also the way in which it's shot, it's largely like medium to wide angle shots that take place in long continuous takes, from what I can tell. And actually, that is a big innovation, because here's the thing, even with I think a lot of Jackie Chan stuff is shot very beautifully and is really great. But even in like some of Jackie Chan's best work, there are a lot of cuts, right? And they're not bad cuts. They're cuts that like assist with the storytelling of the scene. But in this movie, there's many sequences that it's just like, wow, this is playing out way longer with no cuts than I typically see in these kinds of movies. I'm not saying it's like setting any records, but that is the mode in which the movie is shot and edited.
It feels more intense because you linger on it so much longer.
Medium to wide angle shots, long continuous takes, very few cuts as far as I can tell. And that makes it really, really gripping. But the style of the martial arts is just feels different than what we've seen before. And then you get to, I just remember watching this movie and getting towards the end of the film and being like, oh man, like, wow. Well, that was a really great movie. That was a really great movie. I'm glad the movie's over now and had a good time. And then learning that there's another like basically 20 to 30 minute act in the movie. And I'm like, well, there's no way they could possibly top what they just did. And then, of course, the final action scene. I mean, that is what is going to be like define this movie, in my opinion, right? Is like the final 20, 30 minute action sequence where you have multiple characters, multiple different types of weapons, multiple different fighting styles all happening at one time. It's unlike anything else you've ever seen before. It is hugely ambitious. And the movie is worth watching just for the final fight scene alone. Having said all that, I mean, the plot is pretty ridiculous. I will also say that the movie's voice acting is pretty bad, in my opinion. It sounds almost like AI. It feels like the movie takes place somewhere in Southeast Asia. And the reason, my guess, is the reason it's somewhere in Southeast Asia is because the movie makes it look like whatever country it's in has a lot of child trafficking and also police officers that are complicit in said trafficking, and they don't want to piss off any specific country in Southeast Asia by naming it. And as a result, there's like all different languages being spoken. Like there's Chinese and Vietnamese and English. And so there's no, cause there's no like, there's no sense of actual place to this. And the plot is ludicrous. The voice acting is pretty bad. It sounds like dubbed in English, even though like the, the lips match what they're saying, like it sounds dubbed. And so that part of the movie is pretty hard to watch, but that, you know, people aren't necessarily coming to this movie for that stuff. And yeah, despite that, I think the movie is still extremely successful and well worth checking out. It's going to be one of the greats of martial arts cinema. So
I do. I actually want to amend my earlier comment. My biggest complaint about this movie is that the credits don't have any behind the scenes stuff. I was hoping beyond hope when this movie rolled credits that we were going to get a Jackie Chan style, you know, kind of BTS as the credits roll, like all the times where little bloopers or little like, oh, the action sequence didn't work. God, I wanted that so bad. And
I would love to see that, Jeff, but I think Jackie Chan set the bar. He always wanted to be like, oh, this is fun times. We're having fun times, right? This is a fun action movie. Look at how much pain I put myself in. This movie's not fun times. This movie is, I will use a hammer to destroy your spine and then your foot, your shin, as it's being kicked towards me. That shot of them, him swinging the sledgehammer at the really big dude, the bald dude, and then the top of the hammer just goes flying past his head.
Crazy.
Is that an edited shot? Or is that what actually happened? Like, there's so many things like that. I'm like, you can't have the fun bloopers because this movie was built with pain. Not joy. Yeah. In a fun way.
Yeah. But any sequences in particular we want to talk about, I will say, Jeff, the sequence you described is an amazing way. First of all, they have that woman from Chocolate in the beginning of the movie. Right from there, I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
What dude, this will kill everybody. This
what awesome. Is killing everybody. Like, opening to this movie where it's like this woman who theoretically is going in to save this, and then she's a total badass. Yeah, that sucks, by the way, that she never comes back because she's so great.
Well, the movie straight up tells you at the beginning, we can kill whoever we want.
Right.
Everybody is right away.
Kill the kid.
And so then I'm like, oh, wow, this is like, didn't anticipate this would happen in the beginning of this film in this way. And then, you know, his daughter gets stolen and he's like the T-1000. Like, it is amazing to see this guy running, you know, 30 miles an hour down the street catching up to this thing. It's incredible.
He did not have to do this barefoot. Like, there's no mandate that's like, it would have been impressive in shoes.
In shoes. Yeah.
Yeah. And he runs over glass at one point, too. Which it's very much a Die Hard moment with all of this. Like, you think Die Hard is tough? Like, imagine everything that he goes through here.
Right. But then they, you know, get to the big building and stuff, and there's countless amazing moments in that. Like the moment when he drives the motorcycle down the hallway in the building to get rid of it. It's like, wow, like never thought about that. The cage, never thought that was an idea you could have. The cage match I thought was also really impressive.
The pyramid of bodies.
Yes. Yeah, the pyramid of bodies, right.
Yes.
Amazing. I love Joe Taslim in general because we saw him in Mortal Kombat 2 this year as well.
Yeah.
But also his like trying to be sly and trying like him putting on the act to try to get to the thing. And then, you know, then the lead just like comes in and messes up his entire thing.
So
like, I love this. So close.
Him.
Could have saved a lot of time. A couple of things that, you know, when that sequence happened was when I realized this movie understands that you need to have the fighting happen in different lighting environments for it to be varied. Yes. Right. Cause they're fighting in like this guy, Joe Taslim is fighting in like red and this guy's fighting in like white and blue and like in these different lighting environments. It's like, oh, this is a nice variety. Also, they fight as a way of learning who each other are, which is very beautiful.
Character development.
Cool, right. Character development. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, that by fighting, they're communicating that like, hey, I'm actually not a bad guy. So I like that as well. And then of course they go to kind of the big den of iniquity or whatever, where they need to get the kids out, and a lot of cool sequences in there as well. So
it's I love how cartoonishly evil the cops are, because that reminds me of a lot of older like martial arts films and like Hong Kong action films too, where the cops are just like fully bought out and fully like they're not even trying to hide it. It's just so blatantly like silly, and the people are like, what are you doing, man? All that. It all feels like a great throwback. Joe Tettleman dying at the end surprised me. Surprised me that they even did that. But I also feel like, well, we didn't see what actually happened to his lady, to, you know, to his wife. Like, that leaves the, yeah, the door open for her to come back and kick ass in the sequel, right, and get revenge.
Both, yeah, maybe both, because I guess he's definitely dead, right?
He's definitely dead. Yeah. but she is like, yeah, they only vaguely say, like, oh, yeah, we really enjoyed killing her or something like that.
One of my favorite elements of the movie is also Yayan Ruhian, who mm-hmm. plays Mad Dog in the original Raid. And they make him look extremely badass.
Yeah.
Using a bow and arrow, which is not so something badass that I would have expected, right? It's taking something that you think is not that dangerous mm-hmm. compared to guns or hammers or knives, bow and arrow, but it's a really, really big bow and arrow, and therefore it's extremely really dangerous.
Well, I love like that he's not going around shooting guns, because bow and arrow is more threatening and a little more elegant, a little more graceful. We don't have people shooting guns that much in here. It's bone crunching. Yeah.
If you've ever, you know, played a third person action video game, you know that the bow and arrow is always the weapon, you know,
the great stealth weapon,
the guns, because it's, you know, silent killer, one shot killer.
Right.
That's how this movie approaches it, too.
Yep.
But again, the final fight sequence and five different sort of performers in different styles, all in continuous motion, and with different priorities and different motivations. It's really just unlike anything I've ever seen before in a martial arts film. Like, it's really like a new high watermark for what they can achieve with this format.
And it would have been amazing if it had been a brief moment in that fight.
Right.
But it is, it keeps going and going, and it is so brutal. And like, they are just destroying one another. You know, it's an incredible sequence.
Agreed. Any other thoughts on The Furious? I think we all had a great time with this one. I'm glad to
go see it.
I'm glad it's nice and tight. It doesn't overstay its welcome. Like, it knows exactly what it needs to do, and it gets you there real quick.
I think the end is a little abrupt. Truth be told, but that's fine. I mean, there's no reason to complain about this movie. It's just, it's delivering exactly what you sign up for in spades. And it's a bummer that we can't tell people to go see it in movie theaters right now, at least in America, because I think it's out of movie theaters. But
in a week or two, it will be on VOD in the middle of July.
That's right. Like, mm-hmm. in a couple weeks, it'll be on VOD. By the way, I did think it was kind of brutal how all the police officers died in the state, except for that one woman that survived, I think, right?
But she didn't come out unscathed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But especially, you know, that one incompetent but nice seeming guy that like helped to save them multiple times, even though he was almost dead.
He's got a grip
dead.
On him, man. His hand, he'll, you know.
And they just cut I think they lopped the hand off, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, still hold on, lopped off. I don't think that works physically, but it was a cool moment.
Brutal, man. Brutal sequence. And yeah, it was a movie where took no prisoners and no one is safe. And I really appreciated that.
The other cool thing I'll mention is that I also liked how we get the setup of the daughter, you know, training with him, and that pays off. And she's not just a damsel in distress. She actually motivates a lot of her own rescue and like gets the kids. I love how they're like, she's like, climb down this thing. Oh no, it's too high. Fall, crash. But like the fact that she has some agency, and I thought was a cool touch. It wasn't just, oh, go save my daughter who's completely helpless. It's like, no, the daughter is being smart too and being, you know, motivated to save herself, which I thought was cool.
It also, like, the whole setup of this thing, like using another child to lure the kids to kidnapping.
Brutal.
That is a thing. That is a thing that also exists. And this movie reminded me, like, I told my daughter the next day, I was like, hey, when you're out and about and another kid that you've never seen before invites you to come somewhere or like goes, don't go anywhere. Like,
trust no one.
Trust no one, especially strange kids. Like, you can play with them too, but don't let them take you somewhere. Cause we're at the point at playgrounds where occasionally they may like go off at a corner that I cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing. It's a thing parents are always worried about.
Do not let them take you to a second location, basically.
Any location. How about any location?
Good advice for anyone.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, at the end of the day, you should check out The Furious in whatever format you can see it, but it is very impressive that Kenji Tanigaki made a movie. And that's going to bring us into this week's episode of The Filmcast. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode with video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, it's going to be Evil Dead Burn, which is counter-programming from the Moana remake. So I guess if you're going to one, you're probably not going to the other.
Coincidentally, it's what I said when I saw clips from the live-action Moana remake. Like, burn this thing. It's evil. God.
Yeah, just saying Evil Dead Burn would be adequate because it is evil. It should be dead. The Moana franchise should be over.
Yeah.
But it's still alive. They've reanimated its shambling corpse to haunt our theater screens once again. So all that said, Evil Dead Burn, going to be the main review for next week here on The Filmcast. We thank you so much for listening to us. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Until next week, they are Devendra Hardwar and Jeff Kanata. I am David Chen, and we'll see you later. Goodbye.